Today on the Sex and Tell Show, we're going to talk about trans issues for trans women, such as male to female transitions, gender dysphoria, and coming out to friends and family. All right, so you're listening to the Sex and Tell Show with Heidi and Sonia, and we have a special guest, Sarah. Maybe you could tell us a little about yourself, Sarah.
Okay, well, hi, my name is Sarah. I'm a transgender woman. I live right now in Ferndale, Michigan, which is a very big sort of LGBT center. It's a very fun town, and it's also home to Affirmations, one of our biggest LGBT support centers there. There's a lot of activities with the community there. I have been living as a woman full-time for a little bit over a year now, and I also advocate out to the community, trying to help other transgender people come to terms with the changes they're going through and try to make them healthy and happy.
That sounds great. That's Sarah, awesome. I want to ask about your life before you, as you say, lived full-time as a woman.
Okay.
What was that like, and when was that?
Well, I'm 32 now. When I was really starting to kind of figure things out about myself, I started cross-dressing when I was 26. Mm-hmm. And it was just for fun at a Halloween party. I didn't have a costume 4 hours before the party was supposed to start. So kind of in an emergency, I called my friend up and said, hey, let me borrow some of your clothes. And it was literally just a life-changing experience for me. Mm-hmm. And I found that I really liked, you know, presenting that way. And so I started to do that more often. And I think, as you know, I started to do that more regularly over the years, I started realizing, you know what, there's something bigger here than just dressing up in clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And around 2008, I was really starting to realize that, you know what, I just can't be happy anymore. Mm-hmm. As, you know, as a man. And you start realizing real quick, you know, once you see this about yourself, once you start making those realizations and connections, that you can't unsee them. You can't ever go back to, you can't forget about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it kind of colors the whole rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And the more and more you go on, the more and more you realize that, you know, the person you were, the person you became was just so much of a mask that you were wearing to cover up the person that's really inside and the person you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I sort of realized that this was really the direction I needed to go to be happy. Mm-hmm. At all whatsoever in my life in about 2008. And after I was able to secure some employment, some health insurance and such like that, because it's a complex process,
mm-hmm.
Went through a little bit of therapy and started my hormone therapy in September of 2011. And I came out officially at work, which is the last place that I wasn't Sarah,
mm-hmm.
in April of 2011. And like I said, I've been this way ever since, and I'm happier than I've ever been.
Yay.
In my entire life.
That's really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So during the process, I'm sure there were a lot of barriers. What would you say would be the biggest barrier that you had to overcome yourself?
Oh, goodness. I think probably, the biggest barrier was my own self.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a pretty conservative family. They certainly weren't bigoted by any means, but, you know, we grew up in white, straight, Catholic suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a real, really instilled in me to just kind of conform and be normal and, you know, don't deviate from that. And so in my mind, when I started realizing these things about me, I was thinking to myself, oh, goodness, you know, this kind of makes me a freak because I'm not used to this sort of thing. I was never exposed to this. It was never made in any way viable, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never, like, people just weren't trans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just weren't gay where I grew up. And so I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how to deal with it. So I spent a long time pre-transition just really second-guessing myself and thinking to myself, oh, God, I don't want to move forward with this. I know what I need to do, but I don't want to move forward because I'm so terrified of the world, mm-hmm. of what my family will think, of what my friends will think. Will I ever be able to get a job? Will I ever find romance?
Yeah.
You know, will anyone ever love me if I'm this person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big pressure just to say, you know what, I can swallow it. I can just stay depressed. I can stay listless and, you know, just not do this for the good of everybody else.
Mm.
And, you know, I can suck it up, but that only happens for so long until it gets
right.
too much.
Right. And after you've become more self-aware and you've accepted that part of yourself and the process begins. You mentioned your family.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly did letting them into that process for you go?
It was simultaneously the scariest and best moment, I think, of my entire life. I wrote it all down ahead of time because I didn't want to fumble over my words and I mean, I was shaking myself to pieces. my ex-wife was there with me to support me, which is really nice. And I told my family ahead of time that I needed to kind of call a family meeting. And no, we don't have family meetings, you know. So when I said, you know, mom, dad, I need the whole family in one place at one time.
Like,
I
need
to
talk
to everybody.
What?
They thought I was dying.
Yeah.
They thought I was there to, you know, tell them that I was getting a divorce from my ex. Mm. I mean, we were, but that wasn't what we were there to talk about.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
We hadn't made that decision at that point. But so, all sorts of things. And I had to reassure them several times. I'm like, look, I'm not dying. I'm okay, but it's just important and I just need to talk to everybody about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got them calmed down for just that week, went over there on the weekend and I kind of sat in the middle of the room and my eyes were locked on the piece of paper that I'd written my little speech down. Yeah. It was about 2 pages long. And I said, you know, thank you for being here. It's really nice to see that you all support me. Please don't ask any questions until we're done, because there's going to be a lot of information thrown at you right now, and I just need you to just be patient with me and listen to me. I talked about what I've been going through, the anxiety, the depression, and questioning my identity and, you know, deciding that I needed to do this, kind of what it meant, what would be happening, and that I love them all very much and that it was nobody's fault. You know, that was a big thing is... Parents and family always think that, oh, we raised our child wrong. You know, maybe there was too much female influence in their life, or, you know, maybe dad wasn't around enough, or maybe we let them watch the wrong TV programs or something, or that one time when I painted their toenails when they were four, you know.
That's what did it.
Exactly. Oh, no, you hear all sorts of theories about it. Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to make it very clear that, like, look, mom, dad, this is not me about, you know, it's not about accusing anybody. I love you all very much, and I know you love me, and I just want to let you know that this is going on. Mm-hmm. So I finished reading and I said, okay, you can ask me questions now. I'm done. And I looked up like slow and terrified from the piece of paper. My eyes hadn't left it the entire time. I hadn't looked anybody in the eye.
Were you expecting a certain reaction?
I was expecting my mom to be a ball of tears, completely inconsolable. And I was expecting my father to be upset, like just not really knowing how to deal with it, but, you know, probably just channeling his confusion into anger. I wasn't really sure, you know, but I'd heard so many horror stories.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel bad expecting the worst out of them.
I think that's totally natural, though.
Well, you had
especially
to brace yourself for the potential.
Right. But I'd heard so many other coming out stories, too, that ended poorly. You know, I when I was looking into transitioning, I was looking on the internet for other trans people's stories. And they were always these horror stories of, well, my family's not talking to me, my wife left me, my children won't speak to me, I lost my job, my best friend has disowned me, but hey, I'm living true to myself.
Oh my God.
And so many of them, so many, you know, trans people have to deal with that. So, you know, that was what I knew coming out to be like.
What, do the happy ones not write on the internet anymore?
I guess. Well, that's actually one of the big reasons why I started my blog, but I'll talk about that in a little bit. But so I look up from the piece of paper and my mom is crying a little bit, not an inconsolable ball of tears, but she's dealing. And my father had kind of pursed his lips, and he tends to do that when he's upset. And so I was a little apprehensive, and he just took a deep breath, and he said, okay, we still love you. And frankly, I don't even know what he said after that, because the most important words that I could have heard at that moment had already come out of his mouth.
Mm.
And we talked, you know, obviously they were confused. Mm-hmm. They had questions. They didn't know how to deal with it. And it's, you know, it's taking them some time to use the right name and use the right pronouns and stuff like that.
Come down from the mountain, you have been gone too long. The spring is upon us, follow my only song. Settle down with me by the fire.
process for them. I needed to be very patient with them. Mm-hmm. And my family's very supportive nowadays. And in fact, I was just over there the other day hanging out with them, and everything was just fine.
Was it strange for you being introduced as their daughter, Sarah?
It was. We had gone to a car dealership to purchase a new vehicle for me. And it was the first time, really, that we'd kind of been in public interacting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting down, the salesperson, and my mom said, you know, hi, I'm Dolores, and this is my daughter, Sarah. And again, I was giddy. I was beside myself. Like, I entirely forgot that, like, there was a new car involved. And
the real gift. Well,
I was just like,
this is my daughter, Sarah.
I don't care. I'm her daughter, Sarah.
There's this, I imagine it must feel actually like a lot of pride wells up in you because this is completely you in front of your family.
And, absolutely. And, you know, I can be myself. Mm-hmm. And that feels good, not to have to put on an act for mm-hmm. them. That mm-hmm. I can act as feminine as I am. And my friends joke, I mean, I really am very, very, very feminine. It's pathetic sometimes, but
your nails are much prettier than mine.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie. I saw your nails and I looked at my hand and said, oh, it's hideous that I'm a pianist. My hands are so much uglier than your
goodness.
Hands. But I am curious. You talked about the hormones
mm-hmm.
And some other of the processes when you decide to transition.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk me through what
medically what the process is?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. It actually starts off with, or generally starts off with therapy. You need a letter from a therapist basically saying, yes, you are trans. Yes, you need to medically transition, you know, to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was seeing a therapist for a while. They wrote the recommendation letter for me. I took that to a doctor that the support groups had referenced me to.
Mm-hmm.
And they put me on two medications. Now, there's a handful of medications that specifically people transitioning from male to female will be taking. I don't particularly know much more than testosterone injections what trans guys will go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I've particularly had to deal with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at least for, you know, for people like me, it was, you have to have testosterone blockers mm-hmm. to stop your body from producing the androgens. And then you have to have estrogen then to replace it to, you know, feminize your body.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll just do a simple blood test. They'll kind of read your hormone levels and prescribe what needs to happen from there.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was going through a lot of laser hair removal
mm-hmm.
because the hormones will not take your beard away.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, you know, if you don't want to have to deal with that the entire time, and I don't, then yeah, you've got to go through a lot of laser treatments. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a very involved and very expensive process. Very difficult to do without steady employment. Very mm-hmm. difficult to do without health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you know, between the therapy and the doctor's visits, you know, monthly hormone doses,
mm-hmm.
laser is pretty expensive in and of itself.
Right.
I've probably dropped $1,000 on lasers.
Mm-hmm.
Alone, let alone, you know, doctors and hormones mm-hmm. and such as that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, at a later point, if you want breast augmentation, because the hormone therapy generally doesn't, it won't endow you too terribly much. I mean, everybody's biology is different, but
right.
don't expect amazing results, I guess, out of that.
But I want to ask about your healthcare, because you had a therapist
mm-hmm.
approve everything and sign off.
Right.
So does that mean it's covered?
Generally, therapy is not covered by healthcare. A lot of, I guess, mental care services aren't covered just in general,
mm-hmm.
regardless of why you're seeking those help services.
Sure.
So the doctor's visits were, the hormones are covered by healthcare, but like the laser hair removal wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the big kicker is that a lot of surgeries for transgender people, specifically like the vaginoplasty,
mm-hmm.
the quote-unquote the surgery, is generally not covered because it's considered cosmetic.
Right, yeah.
Oh.
It's considered, it's considered entirely voluntary, which I, you know, a lot of, I would say the majority of trans people really think is silly because
That's fairly involuntary.
You know, you don't ask, you know, cisgender people to, I'm sorry. And for those of you listening, cisgender means if you were born a boy and you think you're a boy, then yeah, you're cisgender. Likewise with girls. You know, they don't ask cisgender people to walk around with non-functioning genitalia. So, mm-hmm. you know, and if you wanted to get that fixed, it's, oh yeah, I know perfectly. Absolutely. Your genitals don't work. No, let's get you in here and let's get that souped up. And, you know, we kind of feel the same way of like, I'm not really supposed to have the equipment I am right now. Can I get it replaced? And they're like, no, you don't need that.
Oh,
that's cosmetic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ways that it's defined in the medical community that are big barriers for us right now. It's actually listed in the DSM-4, basically the manual that mental health professionals use for standards of care. So we're at gender dysphoria, as is known as a mental disorder.
Could you explain gender dysphoria a little bit?
Okay. Gender dysphoria is pretty much what drives us to make the changes that we are in the first place. It's the feeling of general uneasiness, and that's a very light way of putting it, with our gender identities and the way that our bodies are and how we need to present. Ultimately, dysphoria, as it's used kind of in the community, describes us an intense sort of depression, and it can be very quickly onset if something triggers you, if something really, makes you feel dysphoric. Really, when I was going through, just before I started medically transitioning, when I was still technically living full-time as a boy, there were days where I would have to, I would know I was getting together with my family or something like that. I would have to put on pants instead of wearing a skirt that day. And just the fact that I had to put on pants instead of being able to wear what I really wanted to was enough to make me feel severely depressed. I didn't want to show my face to the public. I felt like I was putting on an act. I felt disgusted by my own body. And I mean, it really fosters a nasty sort of whirlpool of self-hatred and depression that kind of pulls you down. And if it goes unchecked, if you don't do something to make you feel good about your body, such as medically transitioning or even just wearing the appropriate clothing, mm-hmm. or being called by the appropriate name or someone using the appropriate pronouns for you,
mm-hmm.
if it goes unchecked, it very strongly leads towards suicidal thoughts and such like that. You start looking for ways to get out of the body that you've been trapped in.
Right.
And
yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to get too, heavy, but that's...
No, go for it.
I mean, that's exactly, that's, I think, what people need to understand is that this isn't a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I get a little edgy when people say, I really admire the courage that you show, or I admire you making that decision.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like it was a choice for me. My other option was, I could either move forward or I could check out entirely, because there was no staying still and there was no going back.
Yeah.
I couldn't unsee what I had seen in myself. I couldn't go back to just thinking I was cisgender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously not moving and pretending I was a boy, but knowing I was a girl was not doing it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the feelings of depression and the anxiety and the dysphoria was building up so much that I hit a pretty low point.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us do. There was a study out there on the internet that was done called Injustice at Every Turn. And you can Google it. If you just Google Injustice at Every Turn, you'll bring it up. It's a free PDF you can download. And it's a study on transgender demographics and such like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and in there they found, after polling a bunch of trans people, gender nonconforming people, that we have a 44% suicide rate in our demographic.
Oh,
yeah.
That's absolutely terrifying.
It's staggeringly higher than just about any other measurable demographic.
Wow.
And it's really no wonder why. I mean, that's the effect of dysphoria right there.
Mm-hmm.
So if a trans person tells you they're feeling dysphoric,
you need to do something.
You need to do something.
Like some forgotten dreams, seems that all I really was doing was waiting for you. Just like little girls and boys playing with their little toys, seems like all they really were doing was waiting for a love. Don't need to be alone. No need to be alone. it's real love. From this moment on, I know exactly where my life will go. Seems that all I really was doing was waiting for love. No need to be afraid. No need to be afraid. It's real love. Yes, it's real love. Oh, it's real love. Yes, it's real love. Thought I'd been in love before, but in my heart I wanted more. Seems like all I really was doing was waiting for you. Don't need to be alone. No need to be alone. It's real love. Yes, it's real love. Oh, 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 it's real love. Yes, it's real love.
What as like a friend or family member, what can we do to help people that are feeling dysphoric or are going through a transitioning process? What would be the best thing that someone could do?
Really, it's mostly about support and validation. You know, if a person tells you they're trans, you know, and I don't, you know, it doesn't matter if they're, you know, standing there in a full beard with tattoos, linebacker shoulders, and they're 6'4". If they say, look, you know, I'm trans, I'm a woman, make the effort to use female pronouns for them. Mm-hmm. Ask them what their preferred name is, because, you know, calling that person Bob is probably going to be, you know, very triggering for mm-hmm. them. Yeah. But if they want to go by Martha, then absolutely, mm-hmm. you know, you need to validate that identity, because a lot of what leads to dysphoria is feeling like you're alone and feeling like you're never going to get away from the identity you were trapped in. Mm-hmm. So mostly it's about validating them, using the appropriate terminology for them, and also just showing support. We understand that, you know, a lot of cisgender people don't understand what it's like, and that you can't, because you can't know what it's like to feel that separation in your identity.
Yeah.
And the pain that causes. And we understand that, you know, we're not asking you necessarily to understand what it's like to be trans, but just show us the support and the love, and show us that we're not freaks, that mm-hmm. we're not incapable of being loved, and let us know that, you know, no matter what identity, what name, what pronoun we're using, that doesn't matter, that we're your friend and that we're deserving of love.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the big thing for me. Like, I've got an amazing support network of friends. I would say through my transition, I don't remember a single instance where a friend even really so much as balked, let alone, you know, dropped me as a friend and said they couldn't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that I had people with me to tell me, you know, that it was okay, they were there for me, they really didn't care if I was a boy or a girl, that got me through a lot of dark times.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Can you recommend any outside resources to our listeners?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first off, I don't know what sort of resources there are here in Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have a local GSA, if there's, I'm sure there's a support center around here for GLBT folks, mm-hmm. they'll almost always have some sort of transgender support group.
Sorry, what does GSA stand for?
Oh, I'm sorry. Gay Straight Alliance, or a lot of people are now referring to it because Gay Straight Alliance kind of, you know, is not inclusive of the trans community.
Right. Yeah.
They've actually started calling it the Gender and Sexuality Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know really what terms they'll go by, but, you know, there'll be an outreach program specifically probably on campus for transgender people there, and they may be able to point you in the right direction then. Also, you know, the feeling of not being alone, they may be able to actually put you in touch with other trans people, just mm-hmm. so you know that you're not the only one out there. Mm-hmm. There is, I know from the Ferndale area, we have Affirmations, which is our big GLBT center, and their website is goaffirmations.org. Also, I write a blog about my life and my sort of my situation. I wanted to outreach to the community and basically say, hey, it's all right. You know, you're not alone. I'm fumbling through life. I'm completely shooting from the hip. I'm learning as I go along because I've never done this before.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I'm here to support you, and I wanted to reach out to the community. And that's suddenly-sarah.com. So, you know, I'm out there too, and I'm supportive of all trans identities. You know, shoot me a line.
Would it be all right for you to spell Sarah? Is that with an H?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. And so, yeah, it's suddenly Sarah, SARA.com. There's plenty of other resources out there if you look. There's a lot of groups on Facebook. I know Tumblr has a very active community. And I've kind of gotten involved with that. So, you know, we're out there if you look. Unfortunately, though, you know, I know a lot of us are kind of closeted. A lot of us are kind of hiding from the world because we don't think that the world will accept us and such like that. But if you reach out, we are out there, and we will accept you. We will help you.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you so much. I have one last little question, and this is just a personal. I'm so curious.
All right.
What made you pick Sarah?
Oh, goodness. Okay. When I was just kind of back cross-dressing and I hadn't really figured out that I wanted to transition, it was the first time I ever left the house as, you know, as a woman. And my wife and I were going out to a local gay club, basically. I'd researched it. I knew it was a very transgender-friendly place. Mm-hmm. And as I was driving there, we were about 10 minutes away from the place, and I realized, oh no, I don't have a name. I'm like, I can't be introducing myself, you know, as my boy name. That would just be awkward. And so my wife and I kind of brainstormed back and forth, and I had thrown out other various S names because my boy name started with an S, and I kind of wanted to keep it close to home. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us do that. Some don't, but whatever. But I threw out a couple names, and she kind of shot them down. Like, no, not that. You're not a Sandy. You're not a Sasha. And so I threw out. I remembered there was a friend of mine in high school who had spelled her name S-A-R-A, and I always thought that was pretty. And so I kind of threw that out there, and she was like, yeah, no, actually, I could see you as a Sarah. That's cool. Yay. And it kind of stuck. So throughout these years, we just kind of, you know, when I was dressed up as a girl, we kind of referred to it almost like it was an alternate personality. Mm-hmm. Like, and so especially if we needed to talk in code in public, we would talk about my friend Sarah. Mm-hmm. And it just stuck throughout the years. And so when I did actually transition,
you stuck with Sarah.
I stuck with it.
Cool.
That's so great.
Yeah, that's really great.
Also, it was, you know, kind of just indicative of my personality, too. I never wanted to be, you know, flamboyant or fabulous or, you know, anything like that. I just wanted to be just a normal girl, just mm-hmm. blend in with everybody else. And Sarah was just nice and simple mm-hmm. and just very low key. So that's me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Sarah. We were so happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.